Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Gary Freed from Freed Guitars. He has a local guitar repair facility while also making custom guitars and basses with innovative features. We will speak with him about being an up-and-coming luthier and guitar repairman. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by our good friends at Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flo to the Izzo Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a good one for you tonight. I'm in the hot seat playing these beautiful guitars. Ronan's helping at the board. Thanks, Ronan. And we have a great show for you tonight. Scott, how you been?
I have been good, man. I've been busy making videos. So
very busy.
Yeah, for those of you that have been following the Selenium channel on YouTube, that's right, Selenium. Go to it. Find me. Subscribe. Love it. Like it.
Live it.
And send me whatever you want. I mean, bad, good, whatever. I got kind of ripped for my video on the string fixing thing.
Why?
Well, just because everyone's like, oh, that's, we already know how to do that. But I know that there's people that are sitting there watching.
To
that
be honest thing. With you, I never did that.
Well, see, there you go.
I used a screwdriver, a real small screwdriver, like for eyeglasses, and that's how I did it.
Yeah, see? Well, or you can use the end of
it's
your...
It's coming out with my... It's on the Selenium 2 channel. I'll be doing a video on how to... No, I'm just kidding.
But, yeah, no, I mean, just some of the folks on the forums were a little rough, but that's okay. That's what it's for. It's for it's for folks that didn't
FYI,
know.
It's no big deal.
Yeah. And then I did the post the hot tone video, which was really cool. That was a cool little pedal.
That thing is so small. I mean, you have a picture of it. It's just tiny, and that thing just distorts like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly, I was sitting there, and like I said, I was playing the most non-metal amp ever, 57 Custom Twin, and it sounded pretty metal to me. So
yeah. I just want to mention also, too, you did that shootout.
Oh, yeah,
for Audio Technica, which is great. In my personal opinion, I really like the 450 and the 4041. Where they just shimmered with the Martin. The Martin just was perfect on there. They all sounded good.
Yeah.
And it's hard sometimes because it's taken out of context. Like some of the other mics would work well in a certain track because it just, some of them aren't as bright.
Well, that's why if you watch the video, I say, we're not here to pick a winner. We're here to pick a microphone that fits your particular situation.
Yeah, so. I noticed that. That was good. But anyway, they all sounded great, but those were my favorites. But check it out. It really sounds good. And the Martin is it's a killer Martin. Anyway.
Yeah. So this week I'll have the Shure, the GLX wireless system for guitar. That will be coming out on my YouTube channel. And along with that will be the Steve Hunter guitar changing string buddy.
Oh, yeah, that thing. That's a cool little device. It's handy for a Bigsby or...
Yeah, so it was cool. So that will be coming too. So look for those, and then definitely some of the show videos will be coming too. The guy from Kiss, which is totally Bruce
Kulig.
Kulig's totally slipped my mind there, and then Mr. Falvo from last week.
Yes, that was a fun show. So that was really some cool guitars.
Yeah. So you were checking out some pedal this weekend.
Yeah, right? I my friend Dave Macias called me up, and he had just bought one of those little. DSL amps, and he was really liked it, but he brought
what does
this,
DSL stand for, by the way?
It's dual dual super lead or it's a two channel. The TSL is the triple. I know that.
Oh, okay. So. Well, I just want to make sure because I just want to clarify for those.
No, it's basic.
For those with dirty minds.
Yeah. So. It's the same thing I got. It's my internet connection, but that's another story. Anyway, so they he bought this pedal, the Seymour Duncan 805, and it's a boost pedal. It boosts 36 dB. If you have a super reverb, it will distort that super reverb and really distort it. That's my Hawk preamp was only 18, and it would crank that. It would push an amp, a Fender amp, to like Marshall creamy overdrive. And it has three tone switches, a low, mid, and treble adjustment. So we were playing around with it, and it got a nice brown sound. And he was playing in a clean setting on the amp, and it was overdriving it to a nice distortion. It was really cool. We're going to have to bring it in. Dave, he's playing with it now, so I can't get it from him, but I'm going to try to nick it from him and bring it into the studio and show it to everybody. It's a really cool little guy.
Well, one thing I do want to mention as a little extra plug for our folks at Sweetwater, because they're giving away an A4040 active ribbon mic. That's like the top-of-the-line AEA ribbon mic. It's like a $5,000 mic.
That
so
is cool.
So you should go to Sweetwater and sign up for that. I'm going to sign up for that.
Can we sign up for that?
I don't know. I'm going to sign up until they tell me I can't win.
Okay, I'll sign up too.
They said I can't win, then I guess I don't win, but I'll...
All right, we're all signing up for it.
But, you know... Fantastic mic from great people, AAA, and then, you know, Sweetwater.
Yeah, and in that Seymour Duncan, Sweetwater is one of the few places that has that 805 pedal. Check it out. There's some demos on it, but it really is kind of a cool. If you need an overdrive to make your little amp just go, it's a hot one. It's nice. It's a really good one. I recommend it. Anyway, let's go ahead to break, and then we will come back with Gary Fried and talk about these great guitars that we have here.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. The number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
Hey, this is Brent Mason with Jeff and Scott, Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, and enjoyed being on the show, and hopefully we'll get together again, and I'm going to go to bed. Just wait. Thanks, guys.
That's great.
Brent's allowed to go to bed, but you guys listening are not allowed to go to
bed. Nah, you can't. I'm sorry, no. But... we got a lot to show you tonight, so it's great. I want to welcome Gary over, a friend of ours, a good mutual friend of ours, Carlos. Thanks, Carlos, for introducing me to Gary. Told me about you, that he had met you, and that he, you know, he'd be good for having on the show, and I'm glad we got you on here. Because I looked at the demo that you had up on your site, freedguitars.com, and the guitar sounded great. And he's brought a couple of guitars and one bass in here, and we're going to take a listen to all of this stuff. So, Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. So, but all right, let me. I'm going to play this a little bit just so you hear a little bit of this guitar, and I'm going to go through. I have two amps here. I have the little Marshall for a dirty sound, and then I also have the Quilter amp here for us to go through the clean tone, so you can get an idea the tonal versatility of this guitar because there's a lot of possibilities. And this, both of these guitars have splitter switches on them, so I'll go through the different things. Right now I have them in humbucker mode. And which pickups do I have on here?
In this guitar you have the Carry Nordstrand Hot humbuckers, and right now you have them both split and in the middle position.
Yeah.
And they're set for like a hum canceling, sort of in between strat sound.
This is the Quilter Direct, correct? So this is clean.
There's a little bit of reverb on it. You can leave our mics on because I'm not playing that loud. There's a little bit of reverb, but it's just a nice... So it gets that nice single coil sound like a Tele. And then here's the treble pickup by itself. That was the two. And here's the bass pickup. Now I'm going to go to humbucker. And this is the bass pickup. And it's got plenty of output. Here's your treble pickup. And then here's the two pickups together.
So, Gary, how do you do the split coil? Do you have it where it's the same volume level, or are you just doing a straight split?
It's a straight split. I try to select pickups that split well because most of them have a extreme drop-off when you split mm-hmm. them. So I search for pickups that are able to split and retain a good amount of volume. These are second on my list, and then the other guitar has Fralin high-output humbuckers, which really split almost to the point where you can't hear that much of a volume drop-off.
Yeah, well, there's a lot. I'll show you when I go to dirty mode, but this thing has a lot of potential in terms of tone. Like, now that's the that's with the humbucker. And this guitar just sustains like forever.
So, Gary, there's push-pulls is on the tone and the volume, right? So is that control each pickup?
Yeah, so your volume control, when you pull that, it taps the neck pickup and the tone control taps the bridge.
So you could technically mix single coil and humbucker.
Yeah, most guitars have a global tap, so it'll tap the guitar and keep both pickups tapped at once. But to me, some of the best tap tones are having a single coil bridge and a humbucking neck or vice versa.
This is a single coil neck pickup and humbucker bridge. And the vice versa with the humbucker neck and the single coil. So there's a difference. And this thing has, I'm going to go to the dirty channel now, and you can hear the harmonic content on this thing. It's just, this is the treble pickup in humbucker mode. And then here's both pickups. That's still in humbucker mode. Now I'm going to go to single coil, and this is the two pickups together. And here's the treble pickup. So it's got a lot of rich, my personal favorite's the humbuckers, but this treble pickup just sings. And I can ping almost on everything. That's his vibrola. So it's got a lot of rich harmonics in it.
Yeah, so with this pickup configuration, you can do up to 8 different configurations, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
if my math is correct.
Yeah, you can do a lot of different things with it. And this now, this bridge is this. Can you tell me a little bit about this guy?
That's a Wilkinson VS100N made by Goto. It's mm-hmm. all stainless steel. It locks down in every position.
So it is locking.
It's the actual trem unit isn't locking, but all the saddles lock to the base plate, so they can't shift in width or intonation. So once they're set, they're set.
Okay, and but the string isn't locking.
The string isn't locked. They lock at the tuners, but it's not a traditional locking tremolo.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about the wood what you're using on this guitar.
On this particular guitar, this is some quarter sawn African mahogany, so very dense and also very hard, so you get some more treble than you would traditionally get out of a mahogany-bodied instrument.
And this piece in the middle?
This is just ornamentation of some flame maple.
Oh, it's not. It doesn't go away.
Yeah, it's just to match the binding on the neck.
Okay, and then the neck is maple.
The neck is maple. The fingerboard is Palfaro or Bolivian rosewood or Morado.
It's a beautiful look, too.
Those were all the different names.
And he has like this is a maple, the edge of the...
Yeah, thing. Partial maple binding.
The binding. It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
And any particular nut? Is there anything special?
It's a unbleached bone nut.
So. Oh, it is bone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I use only bone unless somebody specifies to have graphite or something similar. But
now, I know that you're applied for a patent on your... so we can't get into too many details right now, but once the patent goes through, we're going to have you back to talk in more detail about this neck, because you've developed a way of bolting the neck on where it's just so rigid, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
The rigidness was actually a byproduct of attaching the neck in a way that they don't feel like two pieces when they're together, because a lot of what I would hear from players is that when they played their Strats or their Tellies, the blocky heel would bother them. So originally on the other guitar that you have over there, you could see the first incarnation of it where it was just scooped away. And then, you know, in working with different pieces of wood and just messing around with stuff, I came up with this idea, which basically enables the neck and body to be blended together when it's assembled, so you have less of that blocky heel and more of a unified feeling when you get to the upper portions of the neck.
Yeah, it has a really smooth... we have pictures of it that we'll post on our Facebook page, but it's very easy to access the upper frets, and it's really pleasant to play. It's not bad. But I noticed that you have, after the neck, behind the pickups, there's some screws. There's like a plate here in wood. Is it...
So this plate on the back actually conceals the tremolo and the pickup cavities all in one. So I have the pickups loading from the rear and also the tremolo spring. So the way this cover works is a little bit complicated, and that's probably going to be my next patent application. But this hole right here, which is a 3mm Allen key, adjusts the tension of the springs on the tremolo system, so you never have to take...
Oh, you never have to open it up.
You never have to open it up to adjust the tension, so you just use a 3mm Allen key and turn it clockwise
now,
or counterclockwise.
What about changing strings? I see there's a slit here.
Yeah, and the slit, when the trem falls slack, it'll give you access to drop the strings right through.
Oh, okay, so this is enough room in here for you to put the
strings. So I have to ask, do you get string balls stuck in there?
I think every trem, and you know.
You have to check out the Selenium video, because it will work on this trem.
Yeah,
Did you use an Allen key?
Maybe. You should watch the video.
Because I had one day come through my shop with about 5 string balls like jammed up into the G-string.
Oh, man. Well, I couldn't have planned it better. When I did it with this particular video, I used the PRS that I have right now, this S2 series, and all 6 strings were stuck. And I was like, oh, all right. But I mean, you can push the bigger ones out, but those little guys you cannot push out. And, I freely admit that this is not a problem I have run into much, because I don't play Strat guitars usually.
Oh, I'm
not a big Strat guy.
I get it constantly on guitars and for repair, especially people that sweat a lot and don't wipe their guitars off. They tend to oxidize in there, and then they don't like to come out. I've had to replace block because of it.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Now, I see here is another plate where the electronics are for the volume and tone. But you have a front mounted. What was the reason for this?
It's just a continuous cover plate. So rather than having a piece of plastic or just a wood inlaid into the back of the guitar to cover the electronics, it just enables the plate to actually...
So even though you have the tone controls on this like Tele type of front plate,
uh-huh,
all your access is still in the back.
Exactly.
So all your stuff is in the back.
Yeah, exactly. And all the cavities in the back for the pickups and the tremolo system attach right, directly there. So it makes it easy to wire up.
Now, let me ask you, I'm going to go to the other guitar in a minute.
Sure.
But let me ask you, have you experimented tell us a little bit about your experiences with the different woods and what you think the benefits and disadvantages.
I come from the opinion that any instrument, whether it's acoustic or electric, is foremost acoustic. So every change in wood is going to change the different sound of a guitar. And one thing I always stress to people is that you rarely have an opportunity to, you know, listen to the same exact guitar with different woods. You know, everything changes when you change the woods around. So
now I'm going to play this. No, you don't have to turn the amp on. I just want you to hear how resonant this is, because this I'm about 6 inches from the mic with the guitar, no amp. And it's pretty, it vibrates. You can feel it playing. So the wood is resonating with
it. Yeah, it's got it too.
Good ear.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was whammy barring with it. But So have you ever tried any other woods? What do you think of like Paulina or ash maple?
I haven't worked with Paulina yet, but ash and maple I've worked with quite a bit. And ash I like, but I don't like ash with humbuckers. I like ash with single coil pickups, and that goes for bass and guitar. I feel like ash lends itself to have single coils in it, where when I put a humbucker in it, I always feel like there's something missing from the mid-range.
Mm-hmm.
Alder I do like for both types of pickups. And
so you've made guitars with Alder?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So Gary, I know you're kind of covering earlier, but why do you think people actually think that it's only electronics and capacitors that make the sound of electric guitar, not the wood?
I think
there's that theory that's going around quite a bit. I'm not saying whether I believe it or not, but I don't believe it. But
yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with bad articles in guitar magazines, and a lot of it has to do with people thinking guitars are plastic and not wood. Right. I know it sounds crazy, but I have a lot of customers that come in and they see my guitars, because most of them have a natural finish or some sort of translucent finish, and they're surprised that they're wood and not made out of plastic. But yeah, I don't know what article started it, but you know, it became a thing where people say, oh, I could put a pickup in any guitar and it's going to sound like, you know, the pickup sounds. But yeah, it's obviously not true, because we wouldn't have people buying guitars out of all these fancy woods for no reason.
We're taking a picture of this. I'm showing Ron, and I pulled out the other guitar. It's a Tele-style body. Tell me a little bit about this guitar.
So this guitar is a bit different. It's got a different species of mahogany. This one's a Honduran mahogany that's one piece.
And it's a they're both like kind of like a I don't know what you call this, a dull finish or?
Well, with the they're both their hand rubbed oil finish. That one has a coat of finishing wax, where this one's a little bit more raw in a sense. But this one has Lindy Fralin high-output humbuckers, which are a bit beefier sounding than the Nordstrom selection, and it also has a hard tailpiece, so there's no trem affecting the sound at all.
Yeah, this has like a Tele back where you have the string slots, like a traditional
Tele. Yeah, and this one has a more traditional four-bolt neck heel, but I use quarter 20 steel bolts that thread directly into the wood.
So this is as rigid as the newer design?
Yeah.
This is maple?
Yeah, that's flat saw and maple as well for the neck shaft.
And then the fretboard.
The fretboard is Granadillo, which is a South American rosewood.
And tell them a little about this, which I think is really cool. We'll have to try this later after the show. But tell us a little bit about these position markers.
These are turquoise, reconstituted turquoise. I think you're talking about the glow-in-the-dark ones, right?
Right.
This guitar doesn't have that one. The other ones do.
But he has basically, it's the same type of material like on your watch. So if it's under the lights and then you turn the lights off, it glows so you can kind of see where you're recording, which is kind of cool. I thought, let me play this a little bit so you can hear a little bit what this sounds like. Now, this has a lot more gain, so it's driving the quilter a little bit more, but I'll give you a little bit of a sample. This is in humbucker mode, both pickups.
Both.
Oh,
When you go to the neck or the bridge, whichever, do the go between single coil and humbucker. I just want
to
hear.
All right, I'll go to the. This is the neck pickup, humbucker. It's definitely got more output. And here's a single coil.
Yeah.
Now I'll do the same thing with the. Here's the humbucker treble pickup or bridge pickup. And then split. And then let me go into the distortion mode. This is the humbucker bridge pickup. Plenty of sustain. Here's the single coil of that. And then here's the humbucker bridge pickup. And then here's the single coil version. It's got a lot of... But it's definitely a higher output. I don't... Rolling off the treble. Kind of the woman tone.
I've taken my panties off and thrown them at you.
So it's got a nice... It's a definitely a big difference in sound, but it's hard to tell if it's just the pickups or it's more the whole...
The whole package?
Yeah. Do you think the wood's affecting it, though, a lot?
The wood definitely does. I mean, this is a much lighter weight wood, so it's...
It's a very light guitar, yes.
So it's a bit more resonant in that regard, but the pickups there, to A and B, those two guitars with those pickups, they're vastly different in sound.
Yeah.
Those almost have a single... The Nordstrands and the other guitar almost have a single coilish type of vibe to them, where these are more... raw humbuckers to my ears when I...
This gives me more like a PAF sound. It's not as high output.
Exactly, yeah.
But it has more tone because of the lower output. When you have a lower output pickup, you have a little more tonal variation.
A little bit more treble.
Yeah. I mean, I like both guitars, but I like those... That guitar, I could do a lot more with different sounds on it. But this guitar just plays... Again, I it's hard to describe that on the air, but this guitar just sustains forever. So that harmonic I was getting in the distortion, it's there. It's going like an octave.
So let me ask you kind of a semi-loaded question, Gary. So you're building guitars, so that must mean that you kind of feel like the ones that are being made out there, mass-produced, let's say, not other, local luthiers or whatever, but mass-produced, there must be something that you feel that you're doing better. So I guess kind of... Can you sum up what you think that you're doing different and kind of making your guitars different than other produced guitars without, totally knocking them, but,
I mean, mass-produced guitars suffer from anything that's mass-produced, so,
right.
Cost becomes a concern and, fine details can't get paid as much attention to, so... fretwork and gluing frets in, the edges of frets, fitment of the neck to the body and things like that, paying attention to proper neck angle, and really another big thing is a good setup. That's mm-hmm. one thing. A lot of guitars come from the factories with really poor setups, and that can really dramatically affect the sound of a guitar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nuts are another issue.
Oh, yeah.
So, Gibson's the biggest offender of it. I have to say it because they really are. They send guitars out with nuts that just need to be replaced.
The most amount of guitars I own are Gibsons, so I love my Gibsons, but I have to agree.
Yeah.
They have bad nuts.
I'm not going to mention any names, but one of the problems with some of the other guitars that I've seen that are made by a bigger company is when you go up and down the sides where the frets are on the edge of the fretboard, they're not smoothed out and beveled out and like yours is, and they grab.
Yeah.
And I've heard this complaint from people buying different guitars that it's hard to play because you basically get caught up in it. And this is, one of the things about somebody making the guitar handmade, you can tell in this finish, you can tell that he spent the time and did it right. And same thing with this neck, the smoothness of this neck. I don't know how many coats you use, but
it's actually really light. It's probably like 3 or 4 light coats of a satin nitrocellulose, and after it's cured, I literally rub it out by hand to give
yeah,
it that,
but you can
that feel.
You can yeah.
Because a neck that you buff out with a buffing wheel just doesn't have the same feel as a neck that's been buffed out by playing, so I kind of give it a kick in that direction and let the players do the rest. But if you play my guitars a lot, you'll wear through that finish quickly and get that old Fender vibe, which is what people like to have, you know.
But I mean, I've tried the nitrocellulose like with some of the Fenders, like the lower end Fenders, and it's not as smooth as this. This is almost like a regular
Fender doesn't do nitro.
No, they have
they're poly.
Oh, they're poly, but it okay, then that might be it because it's not
the really glossy stuff.
No, it's a kind of like a duller. This is kind of glossier than most, but it's this kind of feel, but it's a little rougher.
It's
not bad. I mean, it's playable, but this is nice. I mean, it's
thank you.
It's close to I like, you know, the old style necks that are real shiny because they're fast and slick. This is close to that.
It's in between, right?
Yeah, in between. Yeah. But now that one's the same thing. Is that a?
That's the same thing. That one just—it's the same exact finish. It just hasn't been buffed as much. So
okay. And then the bass is what?
The bass. That one is all poly, but that neck has been sanded to 600 on the playing surface, and where it meets the body is brought up to a full gloss. So that one over time will buff itself out, just not as easily as nitro, just because it's a bit tougher of a finish.
Yeah, we'll get to the bass in a minute, but the that neck has that like traditional, really smooth, like
yeah,
Les
really.
Paul or
absolutely
something like that. But this the wood on this thing is amazing, but that I think is a big part of it is that when he spent the time and did the work, and you can feel it in a guitar.
How important are your locking tuners? And I know you said you're using different ones now. How important is that to the guitar?
I like them more for the convenience of being able to just pull the string through and lock them down without having to do the wraps on them. I think keeping a guitar in tune is more down to the quality of the cut on the nut and things like that. But I've been using Spurzels, but I started to use Hipshot locking tuners because I feel like they're just a bit smoother for the player and a little bit more precise. But I try to stick with the American companies when I can.
Do you put the drop D on there?
Not on my guitars, but on the basses I do. I put the D tuner. That one doesn't have it because it wasn't spec'd by the customer, but usually I put the D tuner on them.
And those are?
Those are Hipshot Ultralights.
Ultralights on the bass. So that's okay. No, that's good. Now, real quick, I want to go in, before we get to the bass, I want to go into background a little bit. You studied as a luthier.
Yes, yeah. I went to Roberto Venn in Phoenix.
Oh, wow. And what was that like?
I was good. I mean, I basically went there with no woodworking experience before, so I was being thrown into something I had no idea about. You know, my woodworking experience was with my dad's construction company and basically putting drywall screws into into plywood. So,
and then, when you studied there, did you just work on like this type of guitar, electric guitar, or did you do acoustic?
Oh no, we built acoustics and electrics. So I haven't built an acoustic since I graduated, to be honest with you, because my focus has always been on electric stuff. But building the acoustic gives you a better idea of what goes into making a guitar play right, because electric guitars, you can fudge stuff a little bit. Acoustic guitars, when you start fudging stuff, it starts to act a little bit weird. So
yeah,
you know.
Now with repair, what are you working on, mostly electrics, or are you working with solid bodies or hollow bodies?
It depends upon the time of the year, but it's a pretty even mix.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, acoustic guitars and electric guitars, they come in for setups pretty regularly. In my old shop in Brooklyn, acoustic guitars during the winter would come in with cracks nonstop. I mean, I'd have my shop filled with cracked acoustic guitars that you wouldn't believe. So out here, because the humidity is a little bit more constant, the cracks don't happen as much. But, you know, acoustics come in for bridges coming off, sometimes cracks, but sharp fret edges, bad nuts, you know, same common problems that'll plague an electric guitar.
Mm-hmm. So the majority of your work is setting them up easily that you need adjustment, or do you see a lot of problems with guitars?
Yeah, most of them are good setup work, but there are guitars that I run into, you know, bigger problems with. Some of them can't be fixed just because the repairs will exceed the value of the guitar. But one big problem with guitars is that the saddles have been put in the wrong position. So they're a little bit too far back or a little bit too far forward, and then you have people that can't get their guitars tensionate past the 7th fret because it starts to sound sharper, flat. And that happens a lot on acoustic and electric guitars.
Mm-hmm. Now, these guitars, the neck is flat in there, or do you shim?
This guitar, the neck is completely flat, and that one as well. It's
mm-hmm.
flat.
Mm-hmm.
But on some of my newer ones, one that I just finished up is a baritone that was actually a banjo scale length meant to be tuned down, and that one I did a neck pitch on,
mm-hmm.
Just slightly though. Not like you would find on a Gibson or a similar
right.
set neck.
And then your neck radius, are you using a progressive radius or a straight, like,
no,
I don't even know what you would...
It's a straight 12.
12.
Yeah, straight 12. I do any radius by request, though. You know, sometimes people want compound from a 9.5 to a 12.
And you've done that?
Yeah.
Is that hard to do?
Yeah, it's a little bit more labor intensive because you have to, you know, get the transition to be nice and smooth, but... once you know how to do it, it becomes you know, not second nature. But
what do you think of that? Do you think that works, or do you?
Yeah, I mean, I prefer a flatter fingerboard all around on, you know, my instruments. So for me, I prefer either straight 12 or even a 14 sometimes, depending upon mm-hmm. The back profile of the neck. But for instance, a bass I just built, we did a 7.25 from like the first fret to the fifth fret, and then 9.5 after that. Because I wanted some bendability past the 12th fret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
No, I have my Strat is a B style, so it's like a 9.
9.5.
And it's a nice, it's the old like 60s style. It was custom made, but because it has an ebony board, but it's that I love that, just the way it feels. But most people like this flatter type, which is like a, I'm going by Fender specs, but like a C style. But I also notice on this guitar, you have a string tree.
Yeah.
You don't have it on there. Is it necessary for these guitars, or do you find it?
Normally, when when I'm delivering a guitar to a customer, I'll ask them whether they want one. They don't have to have one, but, you know, some people prefer them, especially if they're hard benders on the, you know, two treble strings.
Does it help to sustain it? Do you notice any difference?
Not if the angle behind the nut is already proper, but, you know, if...
Because this is pretty straight. I mean, this isn't pulling... On this guitar, the tree isn't pulling it down that much, but
no.
I've seen them where you get more angle on.
Yeah, when you start to get too much angle, it starts to bind the string at the nuts. So I find that'll kill tuning stability a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to make them not have them, but you know, varying things like the height of the nut and things like that. When you change them a little bit, you'll end up with a slightly different angle.
Have you ever experimented with a zero fret, or do you think it's necessary?
I haven't done one yet, but I'd like to do one. I do think that they're actually a better way to, you know, to have a nut on a guitar, but they're a little bit more maintenance in the fact that if the nut wears out, you have to replace that fret and, you know, level it. A lot of manufacturers, when they use a zero fret, they'll put like a jumbo fret on a guitar with medium frets and make it act like a nut. But realistically, that zero fret's supposed to be just the same height as the other frets, like you would fret any other note.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
They have to be done correctly, and I feel like they're a little bit more maintenance in that regard. So
mm-hmm. Now, your guitars have a lot of sustain, so it's not really an issue. Now, the one with the other guitar that I just played with, the Wilkinson bridge, what kind of under the bridge, that bar?
The block.
Is that a real high mass block? Now, I've heard other Strat players use that you can get heavier blocks.
Yeah,
does that make a difference?
Yeah, that makes a huge difference.
And is that a heavier one? Or?
Yeah, that's a stainless steel. So size-wise, it doesn't look like it's, you know, much when you look at it dimensionally, but mm-hmm. it's got a decent amount of weight to it. And also, if you vary stainless steel and brass and things like that, you notice a difference in sound as well.
What's the heaviest, stainless steel?
You know, honestly, the heaviest, I couldn't tell you. I'm not sure.
Or does that matter?
The weight and the material matters. I find brass to be a little bit warmer than stainless steel. Stainless steel is a little bit edgier on the treble to my ears.
Mm-hmm.
And the brass is a little bit fatter, more, I don't want to say more sustained, but, you know, a little bit fatter sounding than the stainless steel.
What's the material of the bridge pieces?
On this one, it's stainless steel, and the base plate is brass, and that's all stainless steel. So the base plate is stainless steel, the saddles are stainless steel, and the tremolo body.
Have you ever used brass string?
Yeah, I have. I feel like a little bit warmer sound than the stainless steel.
But do they wear well, or do they pretty much wear out?
It depends upon the which bridge you use. The design of it will dictate that. I find the way Hipshot designed this bridge is something I like because the string breaks off the leading edge. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing really in front of the string besides air. So it doesn't wear out very easily.
Yeah, these both of these look – well, the Wilkerson's always has always been a great design in it. There's not much friction there, so – I remember some of the older bridge pieces, especially the old Fender ones.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them were, they would catch and it would break.
Exactly.
What kind of capacitors and things like that do you use?
I'll use orange drop capacitors by request, but to be honest with you, I don't really feel like I can hear a difference between a 5-cent capacitor and a, you know, a Bumblebee $50 capacitor that, you know, mm-hmm. the new old stock ones. But generally, the orange drops are the ones that end up going to my guitar because they have the name cachet, and some players think that they make a difference.
Are these
sound-wise.
250K or 500?
500K. So those are 500K Bourne's pots. Mm-hmm. And I usually put a little bit bigger of a cap than traditional, so I think that one's got a 473 in there, so it'll roll off really dark when you mm-hmm. roll the trout.
Now, is there any, what do you do in terms of shielding? Is this...
So everything's completely copper copper shielded with soldered seams and all sent to ground and everything like that. So underneath the pickups are shielded, the whole cavity shielded.
Is it copper sheet copper, or do you use that like that metallic spray?
Oh no, that sheet copper. That other guitar has the laced paint, which is graphite laced paint, and it takes about 3 coats to get the same resistance reading as copper. And I'll do that if I have a tighter space to deal with because of that tremolo cavity. If I put copper tape in there, it would end up taking up too much space and falling off when I took the cover off.
But both RO, you can use both I know you're talking about a physical problem to change what you're using, but both of them are just as effective?
Yeah, I find. But they're both as effective if the paint is applied properly. One thing in factory guitars that we're going back to, and I've seen this on guitars that are $3,000 plus, where they'll have just one light coat of shielding paint, and it's not enough to create the continuity that you need for proper shielding. So it takes like 3 or 4 coats to get up there, and it's pretty time consuming because you have to wait a few hours for each coat to dry. Otherwise, you end up dragging some of the old paint off when you apply the new stuff. But both is effective in my experience. And these guitars, when you tap them, I didn't notice much noise coming through even this.
No, we're in here. Let me turn this up. I'm not going to play, but I'm going to turn the That's pretty quiet. Now I'm going to go to a single coil.
Let go of the strings.
That's hard to do.
It's pretty good.
That's quiet, and we have fluorescent lights in here. That's really quiet because I have this is on the Marshall and the gain's up, so it should be humming. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so that's the shielding is another thing that doesn't get done on the production guitars.
Yeah,
and it's understandable because
that's really quiet. That is really even in single coil mode. That's very 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 quiet.
And that's something I took away from bass. Building because basses tend to have active preamps in them, and they can get a little bit noisy if you don't shield them well. So I always ended up over shielding them as much as possible to kill any preamp noise.
Have you ever used preamps in your guitars, or do you see any advantage for...
I haven't used any of my guitars just because I haven't come across anything that I really like besides the circuit that... I don't know, are you familiar with Roger Sadowski?
Mm-hmm.
He uses that preamp in his guitars, which sounds great, but his is the only one that I've really liked. So,
He makes that preamp.
He makes that that's proprietary. He sells his bass preamps, but I know I don't think he sells his guitar preamps. So, but if I was going to use one, I'd like to use something similar to that.
Okay, now we're almost to the end. I have the bass up, and tell us a little bit about this bass.
So this is basically a modern style, my take on a vintage P bass. It's got my proprietary neck joint that gives you better access to the upper frets. It's got a bit deeper of a cutaway on the treble side, so you can get all the way up there for the bass players that like to play melodically.
Yeah, there's no square heel. It goes all the way up, and it's...
And this guitar has got, this bass has Hipshot ultralight tuning keys, like we mentioned before. This has the Goto 201 brass bridge and Carrie Nordstrom's NP4 P bass pickup, which is one of my favorites for P bass. And other than that, it's just wired up like a traditional P with a volume and tone. And this one is a two-piece alder body with a maple neck and a Coco Bola rosewood fingerboard.
It's really resonant. When I'm playing it, you can feel it vibrate. It's got pop to it. Now, I'm running it direct, so I'm not using a preamp or anything in there to brighten it up, but it's... And it's great with fingers.
So on your neck, you said that's Coco Bola. Now, is that the kind of neck? Is that, I can't tell. Is that finished, or would you want to put lemon oil and stuff up and it, things?
Yeah,
on that?
You just want to put like a lemon oil or like you know. My flame, lemon oil is actually not good unless it's actually pure lemon oil. But like the lemon oil that you get from a hardware store actually has a dryer in it, so it'll end up drying out your fingerboard in the long run. But I use Planet Waves Hydrate on my fingerboards. And I'll lay on a really heavy coat after I'm done with all the fret work, and should need it for quite some time, but some people like to oil up their necks every time they change their strings.
Do you, so is the Planet Waves is supposed to be pure?
It's their proprietary blend, but it's the best stuff I've found. It just, you know, it darkens up nicely, it doesn't dry out, and it just it just goes on nicely, and it goes a long way. I mean, I use the same bottle for hundreds of guitars.
Just curious, because I use the Dunlop one. I'm just curious how it is different.
Yeah, I mean, I've used the Dunlop before. I mean, I couldn't say, you know, if we're talking about how it's different, you know, maybe one darkens a little bit more, but protection-wise, I think they're pretty much equal.
I'm just noodling around on this thing, but it's just the sustain. I mean, it's really rich.
Now, what kind of fret wire did you say you use? Is there a particular metal that you use?
It's just nickel silver. I try to get the hardest stuff that you can get that's nickel silver, but this is from Stuart McDonald, which is a luthier supplier.
Right.
I like their fret wire sizes and consistency, so I use their stuff pretty much exclusively. Sometimes people want the Dunlop 6100s or the really gigantic ones, and I get those for them, but generally this is a StuMac jumbo size, which is just a hair over like a big medium, so it's not a super big fret.
It's just I'm looking for dead spots and there's none.
What kind of other type of pickups have you used? Like I know that you know, we were talking about TV Jones. Do you use those in your guitars? Or
I haven't yet, no. I've been primarily using just humbuckers, whether it's Lindy Fralin, Nordstrom, Seymour Duncan, EMG. I'm a big humbucker guy, but I haven't used TV Jones yet. I've done a lot of TV Jones installations in my repair work, but I haven't built a guitar around it yet.
Yeah, they're nice. They're very interesting. Pick up a lot of tonal. They're really... It'd be interesting hearing a TV Jones on
a guitar
of those
like
guitars.
That, right?
Yeah,
I'll have to make one. I'll have to make one and bring it by.
Yes, that's another. Yes, you must make one and bring it back here so I can play it. This thing is just amazing. It's really easy to play, but it's got a lot of. It's very rich. It's got a lot of overtones, and it's just it's balanced.
Yeah, to me, a P bass is like, that's what it should do. It should be fast.
This is the P, like, split, the split P bass type.
Yeah, it's not like the single coil P bass pickup. Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever used any of the jazz ones? Or?
Yeah, I usually, in my five strings, I use either Nordstrom single coil jazz or his hum-canceling jazz bass pickups, or in four strings as well. But this bass is actually one that I finished for a customer recently, and... He called me up and told me he wanted a P bass with no frills in it, just something that he could sit in the mix and have a fat sound with. So,
what strings do you have on here?
Those are D'Addario EXL 165. It's just a standard nickel wound.
The one thing I like about that is the white finish is still see through.
Yeah, it's like a, it's on alder, so you don't normally do a see-through white on an alder. It's usually done on ash, so kind of ended up being like a graffiti white, but I was really happy with it. And I can't take credit for the finish. I don't spray my hard finishes. I have Marty Bell down in San Diego do it for me. And
it's beautiful.
He always comes back with unbelievable work, so...
Well, we're close to the end of the show. Can you give everybody information to contact you?
Sure.
Take a look at your website. And then also, too, if they're local and they need repairs, looking at these guitars, they're beautiful. I mean, you probably could get your guitar set up really nice.
Thank you. Well, yeah, my shop is located in Glendale at the Sealy Building. It's 1800 South Brand Boulevard, and it's suite number 103. Glendale, California, 91204. I'm there Monday through Saturday, but you want to give me a call sometimes because I'm in my shop and sometimes I can't hear my phone ring with power tools, or I won't answer my door and you'll think I'm closed because I'm working on some guitars. My telephone number is 213-220-8352, and my website's www.freeguitars.com, and it's spelled like fried.
Yeah. So. So, but yeah, check out the site. You can see some of the, we'll have pictures up of these guitars, but he has some pictures up there, and it's really nice. They're very good. And then is Freed Guitars on Facebook?
It is, yeah, yeah.
Freed, under Freed Guitars.
Under Freed Guitars, yeah.
So you can catch them on
Facebook. R-I-E-D.
Yes, like fra.
So. So since I, in the spirit of my tips and tricks video, do you have a quick tip and trick that you've seen where people, the biggest mistake you see people make on their guitar that they could change and make it better?
Yes, the biggest mistake I see people make on their guitars, and this applies mostly to Fender-style instruments because it really affects the way they play, is winding their strings haphazardly, meaning that when they change their strings, rather than winding down the post, they wind anywhere but down the post. So they'll wind up to the top of the, you know, tuning post, and then they'll come in and say their guitar's got a buzz on it, and it's because there's not enough pressure behind the nuts. So that's one of the biggest things I see people do, so... Everybody should learn how to change their strings and make it look nice.
How many, now, I've always heard on the Fenders you want to go, what, like two or three posts past?
Yeah, I usually do two or three posts past, and I always tell people you're better off going too long than too short because you can always clip it a little bit shorter. If it's too short, then you have to buy a new set of strings.
Yep.
So go four if you're not sure.
Well, Jeff, you want to play us out?
Yeah, I'm just going to noodle a little bit.
And who's our guest next week?
It's going to be Oxygen Amps. They're nice. Based in Vancouver. It's Canada. I'm just trying to remember where it was. But Buzzy Featon actually uses their amps a lot. And so we're going to be talking with them.
Sweet.
And it should be kind of fun, another amp. There's always room for another amp. Always room for another guitar or bass, but yeah. So, but anyway, yes, it should be fun.
Cool. Well, that'll be next week. Jeff, why don't you, we want to thank Sweetwater again. And Jeff, why don't you go ahead and play us out?